This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
We survived.
We did survive. We survived Jonas.
The second biggest snowstorm in New York City history.
Ugh. It felt big. Can't believe there was one bigger than that.
It was only football and a crate of Guinness that got me through it, David.
Oh, James Bond. I went on a whole James Bond movie marathon.
You did?
Which I enjoyed. Yeah, my son George kept on getting his name wrong, kept on calling him Joe Boston. I'm now writing a series of children's books about a Boston-based spy called Joe Boston, because I think it could be very successful.
If we only...
My name is Boston. Joe Boston.
I don't agree on this, but I was going to watch a James Bond marathon, it would begin and end with the oeuvre of Roger Moore.
Yeah, but no, we're going the other way. We started with Spectre.
Yeah.
And then we're working backwards. We're working backwards.
All the struggling crap.
I love it.
Until you get to Roger Moore.
It's a great way to introduce my children to the real concept of Britishness.
Oh, Roger
the complete
Moore.
Fake sense of Britishness that
Top
James Bond movies.
10 Rogers of all time. I thought
it was a good one.
He took that role.
Yeah.
He was like, with Sir Alex Ferguson with United, he took it to its highest point, and it could only be the Moyes of Dalton and then the Van Gaal of Daniel Craig.
Maybe. Live and Let Die. I love that movie.
Oh, I'll tell you what I don't love.
What?
The snow.
You don't love the snow? Was it the wrong kind of snow?
Are you
Rog?
A snow person?
I enjoy snow. I mean, it doesn't snow a lot in London. Not like it does up north. I imagine it's white on the ground up in Liverpool from like the beginning of November until the end of May. But down in the south of England, Rog, didn't snow a lot when I was a kid. So when it did snow, it was very exciting. And I used to go off on ski trips to Italy and Austria and Switzerland when I was a kid. I've always loved the snow.
Oh, I love it. And I'm not a fan of cold and wet.
Yeah.
Not a fan of wet.
Yeah.
I don't love swimming pools.
Yeah.
I think a result,
that's odd.
I've always believed of growing up in Liverpool. City on the river, headed out to the ocean.
Uh-huh.
So chemical filled that you'd walk alongside it and just see dead sheep bobbing up and down.
Are you a good swimmer? I've never seen you swim.
It depends if I'm drowning or not.
I can imagine breaststroke.
And the touring.
Little head
of swimming
coming out of the water.
Most of the time I don't give a crap, but when it comes to the crunch, I can pull off an amazing crawl. But I'm definitely not a skier there. Are you a skier?
Yeah, I love skiing. I told you this. I learned to ski for 3 years. I went to skiing every Friday night on the Royal Artillery dry slope in Woolwich. And I skied for 3 years on hairbrushes, essentially, before I ever skied on snow, when I finally went at age of 12 on a ski trip to Medesimo in the Italian Dolomites. That was amazing. And I like skiing. I've got good fundamentals from the hairbrushes.
You lived out the storyline of Cool Runnings before.
Pretty much.
It even occurred.
Pretty much.
I like the notion of staying cozy.
Yeah.
I like the notion of drinking heavily whilst being snow.
These are all things you can do when you're skiing.
I'd be very good at being cut off in a snowstorm.
Yeah.
But if I don't ski, is it technically still après-ski, the behaviour that I like to indulge in?
Yeah, well, après-ski, pre-ski.
But I loved being indoors for this weekend, David. Mm-hmm. I surrounded by that football of all kinds. Rebecca Lowe's Premier League. Peyton Manning's NFL, Cam Newton, that end of the Patriots-Broncos game.
Yeah.
Exact replica of the Liverpool-Norwich game that had come only hours before.
Yeah.
At Tyler Hale tweeted us to say, just think how much worse Jonas Blizzard would have been if it had chosen to fall on an FA Cup match weekend.
Yeah, I know. That was good. It was great that we had the Premier League.
to keep us warm.
Yeah, I went and saw the Brooklyn Nets on Sunday as well. That was interesting.
Sorry, mate.
No, they actually won a game. They beat Oklahoma. It was amazing. But my little daughter Ingrid danced before the game.
I went to watch the Rangers.
You did?
Thanks to everyone that tweeted that they saw me in the toilet.
How long were you in the toilet for everybody's tweeting?
I was signing autographs in there.
Was that a scheduled appearance? So big weekend coming up, Rog.
Yeah.
The FA Cup.
Glad the snow came down last weekend and not the weekend forthcoming.
Big weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, it's your eldest son's bar mitzvah.
Yeah, scheduled it for an FA Cup weekend.
That's genius. It's like BlazerCon was at the international break. You scheduled this for an FA Cup weekend.
Yeah.
Did you actually know it was an FA Cup weekend before you scheduled it?
scheduled it years ago.
Yeah, Mrs. B definitely knew that it was an FA Cup weekend.
Genius.
Without a doubt.
I wouldn't go to my own kid's bar mitzvah if it was a Premier League schedule.
No, that's not true. Mrs. B listens to this. We know that that's not true. So how's the planning going? How's it going? You've definitely been a little tense, a little preoccupied.
Yeah. Saying that's fair. Parents just landed as we pod. I once wrote a book with my brother-in-law, Nick, called Bar Mitzvah Disco. In the early days of the internet, we used the internet to collect thousands of photographs from across the country.
That's what it was designed for.
Of bar and bat mitzvahs of the 1970s and 80s. To tell a generational story of like music, family, fashion, culture, style.
Yeah.
And that was like, the book shows it's a gaudy time, completely devoid of meaning.
Yeah.
I had a crap bar mitzvah, David. I was light years away from manhood. All the photos just depict me in a shoved into a three-piece suit like a tiny worried little accountant during tax season.
Yeah.
So I always imagined, when the few times I thought about it, that my kid's bar mitzvah would be similarly crap. But what I can't believe about this whole experience.
Yeah.
It's just how meaningful it's felt in a way that you described, Davo, so beautifully as the conveyor belt of life.
There is a conveyor belt. There's your dad, who just arrived. He's currently in a town car.
Potty.
He's currently in a town car heading into Manhattan.
Can I just tell you about my dad?
Yeah.
He's 78. He's an avid cyclist. I had to find out that he'd been in a horrific cycling accident in which his bike had flipped out of the peloton, the pack of bikes, into the canal. Into the canal, and he'd hurt himself, but got back on and cycled the remaining 43 miles of the race. Had to read about it in the local paper.
No, you didn't read about it in the local paper. Somebody told you that they'd read about it in the local paper, and then you found out about
it
that way.
To my dad's here. Yes, carry on.
Yeah, no. No, there's the conveyor belt. There's your dad. Then there's you. Then there's your son. And as your son starts getting older and your parents start getting older, you start to see your place. This is midlife.
Yep.
Young listeners, get ready for it. That is the conveyor belt you see yourself on. I'm going into my 50th birthday.
And where's that conveyor belt going, right
on,
Daddy?
I know, I'm right on the... It's like we never talk about what happened to the Bulls in the arena. It's like the conveyor belt gradually goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kaleidoscopic memories of life, David. Right now, my mind is full of memories of my own bar mitzvah, mostly ones of dread and fear and self-loathing. My son's birth.
Yeah.
And now his bar mitzvah. His future life that he'll be in control of, and we'll have to try and fit in with that. And then ultimately our own death, David. Thinking, I spent a lot of time listening to Cat Stevens.
Okay, odd. Interesting connection.
Yeah, I'm a huge Cat Stevens fan.
Yeah.
Something I've never talked about before on the pod because, you know, it's complicated.
I wonder if Cat Stevens has been to many bar mitzvahs. Not recently.
Tell me this about Cat Stevens. I just got a book called Top Secret, which is a collection of photographs of the Stasi from East Germany.
Okay, another uplifting book.
From their archives. It's their photographs. And there's there's an amazing chapter of Stasi breaking into people's homes to take photographs of kids who were deemed to have westernized influences.
Yeah.
They take photographs of their bedrooms to prove that these kids are on the road to no good.
Yeah.
And one of the kids' bedrooms, the first photograph, looks exactly like my bedroom in Liverpool.
Wow.
Same posters of America.
Yeah.
And the same, eerily, the same Cat Stevens poster over the bed.
Wow.
Yep.
Do you think that's your influence?
On the East German mindset? I realise I probably would have made a very bad communist. But the funny thing about this bar mitzvah crap, Dave, I've been listening to Father and Son. It's a song I used to listen to as a kid the whole time. It's one of the greatest pieces of hidden genius ever put on vinyl. The top surfaces, it's like an onion. The top surfaces are shtick. The second one is shtick. The third one is cheesy. But once you rip them off, the inner core is CST.
Wow.
Cat Stevens truth.
LTD and onions.
And it's about a father and a son arguing with each other about life. And it's the first time I've ever listened to it this year. And I've actually agreed with the dad's parts and not the son's.
So what am I to look forward to? What's on the agenda?
All I'll tell you is dress code for you.
Because
you've never been to one before. Just do what everyone who's traditionally goes to them dress as. Just come, make sure you come in lederhosen.
Yeah, exactly. That'll go down great.
Walk in there in lederhosen.
Yeah, look as German as possible, is what you're saying.
I'd say the bar mitzvah may disrupt pod scheduling next week.
Uh-huh.
Though we are doing a special with West Ham loving Scottish writing legend Irvin Welsh.
Yeah.
Which we're really looking forward to.
It's also an FA Cup weekend. There's not a lot to talk about. Oh, and I'm going to LA.
For you will still be here tomorrow.
Okay, looking forward
but
to
but your dreams may not. Yes.
Exciting news. Rog, you could actually, not you, Rog,
yeah,
our listeners, thanks to our friends at Mini USA, we're giving one GFOP the chance to travel to New
York
and spend a day in the panic room with us. That's going to be disruptive to production.
Sounds like the remaking of a Jodie Foster movie.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you'll never get out. It's part of Mini USA's Defy Labels campaign. Watch our social media in the early part of next week for details on the contest. Even those who don't win the grand prize can receive one of those mini model cars we hold up on the Men in Blazers show.
No, we're doing a custom Men in Blazers mini. It's going to be
fantastic.
One of only four in the world.
Yeah.
Which are probably a better prize to win than having to spend time with us.
Go to the website all about this, miniusa.com/defy labels.
I was once like you were now. And I know that,
that
it's not.
Is this what we're doing for the whole pod?
Westernized influences.
Okay, we got a packed show, Rog. We're going to break down Chelsea and Arsenal resuming their all too familiar roles as Wiley, Coyote and the Roadrunner at the Emirates. We welcome Leicester City's return to the top of the table after a 3-0 dismantling of not-so-sexy this weekend, Stoke. And we recap the 9-goal nipple-bouncing, eyeglass-breaking, defending-optional affair between Norwich and Liverpool in the heart of agrarian England in the middle of the 17th century, Norwich. Plus, an Arsenal legend takes the reins at NYCFC and Stamford Messi officially signs to become Seattle Messi. To the football, Rog. Crack open your black and gold, your Guinness. Trust there's going to be a lot of Guinness at the bar mitzvah.
It's actually a Guinness-themed bar mitzvah.
It is.
He chose it himself.
Perfect.
He actually wanted it to be a Talisker-themed bar mitzvah.
Arguably the first ever Guinness-themed bar mitzvah. Excellent pouring.
Cheers, mate. What a weekend of football, can I just say?
It was a weekend.
I cried. Mm-hmm. I laughed. Mm-hmm. I squealed.
You did.
I marvelled and I mourned. Mm. I mean, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, dodgy neck tattoos, mass hysteria. Mm-hmm. Since December, Davo, last season's top four, who pretty well own the Premier League since its inception, the winners of the past 20 league titles, they have won only 14 of 36 games combined.
It's amazing, isn't it?
We are living in apocalyptic times.
Novus Ordem Seclorum, Rog. Cheers.
Oh, to Norwich City fans.
Absolutely. That was a funny sound. There we go. Much better. Okay, we are now 23-38 of the way through the Premier League season that does not reduce, Rog. And tasked with penning the latest chapter between bitter rivals Arsenal and Chelsea, the scriptwriters, Rog, relied on a narrative that dates back to Cervantes. Arsenal 0, Chelsea 1, Diego Costa and co. go to the Emirates and knock Arsenal from the top of the table. In the 18th minute, referee Mark Clattenburg sent off gangly German robot Per Mertesacker for an ill-timed tackle on Costa. Just 5 minutes later, the Spanish striker turned a Branislav Ivanovic cross into Petr Cech's net. Chelsea proceeded to dangle the carrot, proverbial, in front of Arsene Wenger's side for the remainder of the game, allowing the myriad chances that unfortunately for Arsenal fans fell to offensive powerhouses like Mathieu Flamini, Nacho Monreal and Gabriel. Oh, what a game, Rog.
Yeah, but predictable, mate. Predictable. You know, the second I knew Arsenal were going to lose this game.
What, the opening second?
No, before then, mate. The tunnel.
Uh-huh.
When I saw Theo Walcott's bicep with a captain's armband around it.
This was a strange decision, Rog.
In a game which has psychologically vexed Arsenal. Mm-hmm. To have such a feeble persona lead the team into battle, Dave. I mean, he's essentially the Premier League equivalent, Theo Walcott, of a bedwetter.
Yeah.
There's a Theo Walcott in every class when you're about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
He's the kid who eats chalk in class to make himself vomit.
Uh-huh.
So he can go home and not have to go and, you know, play PE or something.
Yeah.
Check as captain in the Gigi Buffon inspirational. I am a winner. I've won before. I'll win again.
Yeah, against my former
team.
The rare
goalkeeper captain. Why not, David? Why?
You know, the strange thing is, it's almost like Arsene has a blind spot about playing Chelsea. This game is never decided Well, it certainly hasn't for the last, like, 5 years. It's never been decided by the football. It's decided by mental elements, by toughness, by all of those other ancillary things that go into sport. And it's a battle of wills. It's a battle of strength. It's a battle of belief over technique, over speed, over all of the normal things that decide athletic contests. And the idea that Walcott was going to lead Arsenal out and lead them into this battle and win them this battle, it was ridiculous.
And the big question going into the game was Diego Costa, fight or flight?
Yeah. What kind of Diego Costa were we going to see?
Well, I did love it. Before the game, Goose Hiddink had told the press that he told Diego Costa to, quote, put his good hat on and trust Diego Costa to have a good hat that's worse than a trucker hat, David. Because Chelsea, I mean, in credit, they began with a positive optimism.
Yeah.
And then it was Willian forcing a stunning pass into the Francis Coquelin-sized area in front of Arsenal's back four.
Well, yeah, with Flamini just backing up. Willian just pushes him back. He hits that pass beautifully. The triangle on his PlayStation, through ball, and Diego gets ahead of it. I mean, I don't really know what Mertesacker was doing. He's not going to beat Diego for speed anyway, but the fact that he was checked up, he was looking across the line, he wasn't really fronting him, he wasn't getting goal side of him, it was sort of crazy defending.
And we say after the fact that the red card was another controversy within this game.
Not really, though.
But only because Diego Costa was involved.
Yeah, totally.
And only because it was a Chelsea-Arsenal game and it fits the narrative. This was a definite red. Mm. It was a humorous red.
Yeah.
It was a stupid red.
Yeah.
But make no mistake, Per Mertesacker brought this on himself. He dove in desperately. Somehow, simultaneously, as you said, looking at the linesman in a last quirky twist of full-on Arsenal-ish behaviour as he made the briefest of contacts. But Costa, being a world-class striker, did what a world-class striker should.
Yeah, he dragged his foot over his, got the contact, went straight down. You got to think 95% of the time that's going to end up being a red card.
Even on Diego Costa.
Yeah.
For whom?
And usually you're allowed to do that to Diego Costa.
Yeah, but poor guy, you've got a feel for him. Every atom of his body was screaming in a tsunami of seething agony as he fell to the floor. It was all he could do to battle bravely against the centrifugal forces that were threatening to tear every limb from his darling central torso.
Bless. And yet, my sense when I was watching that is that that was a restrained reaction for Diego Costa. He kind of decided, I could go for the full 9 out of 10 overplaying this. I'll give it a 6. That was his. Those extra 5 rolls, that was just a 6.
I'm going to dial it back a bit.
He dialed it back.
But that doesn't make it any less of a red. Having said that, I did note with quiet pride that anyone who still thinks football's not big in the United States just needed to count the number of Americans who hate Diego Costa and can locate him correctly within the pantheon of Donald Trump, Martin Shkreli and Brandy Glanville. He's got those kind of hate numbers, David, and he should. Oh. He's a wrestling heel. Like Rowdy Roddy Piper, like Macho Man Savage, like Ric Flair. To be the man?
Yeah, you got to beat the man.
Woo!
but Rog, he also feeds off that. You know, and I actually thought this was what was amazing about Diego is he managed to dial it in perfectly of being aggressive enough to still attract the boos, to still attract all the every time he touched the ball, to be able to attract the enough, you know, gab, enough mouth from his opposing defenders. He needs that to feed off. And at the same time, he didn't go over the top in the way that he certainly did in the last game against Arsenal.
That's his good hat. But at the same time, the words spoken by Jose Mourinho, do you remember him? So sagely said after the first game this season when Diego had clutched his face in play-acting agony in order to persuade a bewildered referee to send off Gabriel. They echoed in my mind. He said after that game, if you want to speak about Diego Costa with me, just to say he played like he has to play, that's why you have full stadiums. You sell to televisions all around the world for millions and millions because the game has to be played like that. And it was. It was a red card, thriving off Arsenal's clear as day personnel problems. Defensive mid, still a problem. Centre back, still a problem. And then the red card immediately triggered a third striker because Arsenal had to decide who to leave on and who to bring off, bring on Gabriel.
An interesting decision. Very good debate, I thought, on NBC Sports between Robbie Musto and Carl Martino about the merits of this decision to take off Giroud in order to... Obviously, Gabriel has to go on. He's got to go and put on another central defender. But who to take off? I would have put money on it being Joel Campbell who's going to come off at that stage. Instead, Giroud comes off, his leading goal scorer, and many observers and many Arsenal fans in the stadium voiced their displeasure at it.
Yeah, I mean, Wenger had to make a trade-off. He elected to go with speed over the prime goal scorer. Wenger said Giroud was not fully fit, might not have been able to go the 90. And if you think about it, Wenger's logic only became twisted because Chelsea scored so quickly after the red. I think he'd imagined a game in which Arsenal sat back, allowed Chelsea to come onto them with the initiative and hoped to use the speed on the counter. But they conceded almost immediately, which actually allowed Chelsea to sit back. Arsenal went at them. And that's what made the lack of Giroud all the more painful, because on the balance of the game, Arsenal created enough chances to win all 3 points. Walcott, Ramsey, Flamini undermined those opportunities with terrible finishing. Ozil had one of his poorer games of the season. And so the Giroud change felt like it was the big Monday morning quarterback point that possibly it shouldn't have been.
However, with Diego Costa in that kind of a mood, and look, let's face it, one of the things about the red card incident that was striking for me is we haven't seen Diego making a lot of those kind of runs where Willian, he hasn't been leading the counterattack very often, frankly, and he's been drifting out wide. He's getting to play very centrally. He was making those kind of aggressive runs, forcing defenders backwards into tough decisions all afternoon. And with Fabregas also at last joining Willian in some kind of midfield form, Chelsea were going to score a goal, particularly against 10 men. And score they did. Two balls came in from the outside. The first one from Matic. Diego Costa whiffed it in the centre, Rog.
A psych-out whiff.
And it then fell to Ivanovic with his new one-year contract. Rog, perhaps that's all he needed. His new one-year contract extension.
Played in the kind of ball he never played under Jose Mourinho this season.
Yes, spike cross. And the run from Diego into that space in the front post.
War criminal, Diego Costa.
Well, obviously.
Diego Costa, he's done it again, sang the Chelsea faithful. And they're right, it is an unbelievable feat. Two games against Arsenal, he provoked two red cards and he scored a winning goal. Under Jose Mourinho, 4 goals in 21 games. Under Goose Hiddink, 6 in 6. How do you understand that, David?
Well, I mean, look, the one is health. Diego Costa looks like a different human being. He looks like Diego Costa's
younger... You mean physical,
younger,
not mental?
Yeah, younger, skinnier brother. Although this mental Diego is at the side of the line you want Diego to go and be in. It might be the worst behaviour for another Premier League striker. For him, Diego, this is him on very, very good behaviour. And he was aggressive. He looks way thinner. Physically, he's in much better shape. And I think the point that Gus Hiddink has made in interviews, and he's been very careful not to, you know, stick the knife into Mourinho too much. But what he has said is that he's having his players focus on what they're good at. And I think that Diego's instructions are probably very simple. And he's doing it. He's getting into the box. He's making aggressive runs at defenders. He's fit enough to go and do it. And he feels confident in his place.
More salt in the wound for Arsenal fans. Cesc settled in to run the Chelsea midfield, savouring both the space and the responsibility, as well as the chance to stick one on the Arsenal fans. He loved pointing to his Chelsea badge.
Yeah, getting booed every time he touched the ball.
Having both Mikel and Matic together behind him seems to have freed him up from being a defensive liability to focus solely on linking the midfield and Costa. Having said that, the second half was largely cat and mouse. Arsenal a mouse, Chelsea an evil, evil cat. And we had all the Emirates troops, Arlo White apologising for fruity language.
Yeah, I think that's Arse Blog.
Yeah, I don't know who it was, but the Emirates is such a fascinating stadium. There's no atmosphere in it because of all the corporate seats. But somehow, the commentators are always placed right in front of the most foul-mouthed man in England. And on the field, Arsenal started to take risks, forcing as many men forward as they could push up in search of an equaliser, the ball pinging around the Chelsea box. Flamini trying a back-heel flick, thinking he was Wayne Rooney, thinking he was a young Wayne Rooney. Oh, they definitely had their chances, but they've now gone 9 hours, 32 minutes without a Premier League goal against Chelsea Football Club. And we've got to ask, I mean, it all felt like watching an episode of Making a Murderer with Arsene Wenger in the role of Stephen Avery. How does it happen, Davo, that in Chelsea's worst year, with Arsenal feeling title vibes, Chelsea can still take 6 points, which you delight in pointing out is
21.4% of their total points this season.
How does that happen? That Arsenal can't score for over 9 hours, that Arsenal implosively earn red card after red card, 7 against Chelsea more than any other team. How does it happen, David?
There are people you play against in sports. There are teams you play against, you know, schools who you want to beat so badly when you play in school, or clubs you want to beat so badly when you play for a club, or individuals you want to beat so badly when you play an individual sport, that it gets into your head. And you've got to believe that playing against Chelsea has got into those players' heads. Yes, they beat them in the Community Shield at Wembley, but the pressure that they were feeling, I'm sure, coming to go and play them at home. Arsenal desperately want to sink Chelsea. This loss, by the way, for Chelsea, Chelsea would have been right back in the centre of a relegation fight had Arsenal beaten them. It would have been a hugely, hugely satisfying thing for Arsenal to beat them. I think they just want it, honestly, I think they want to beat Chelsea too much. And these are lapses in judgment.
I mean, this fixture has become a psychiatrist's casebook of self-sabotage, masochism, implosive decision-making, footballing torture, in which only one truth seems evident to me at this point. Chelsea don't beat Arsenal in this game.
Oh, well, Arsenal beat Arsenal.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely.
It's like Shakespeare's notion. Is it the diamond, a spirit that hovers over a character and means that no matter how strong a particular opponent is, they can never beat them? Mm-hmm. Was it Antony and Octavius in Antony Maybe. And Cleopatra? There's a line in that play that I think about when I watch this game now. In time, we hate that which we often fear.
Yeah.
And Arsenal do seem to play this game.
Yeah.
With incredible fear.
Well,
Dana.
Chelsea are nowhere near as good as Arsenal as a football team. Like, I freely admit that. Nowhere near as good. By the way, even last season when Chelsea won the league, they're not as good a football team as Arsenal. They do have some very good individuals. And I think sometimes those individuals are not necessarily given the respect that they deserve. Certainly Fabregas getting booed every time, it's going to make him lift his game. Diego Costa getting booed every time, it's going to lift his game. There are psychological traps. Making Walcott the captain, there are psychological traps that Arsenal seem to fall into again and again and again.
That shot in the second half of Mertesacker and Giroud in the stands, all scrubbed up, the Frenchman still clearly simmering, the German absolutely shell-shocked.
Yeah.
And having to watch the game side by side in their Arsenal outfits.
Yeah.
It broke my heart.
Yeah. Mertesacker looking all ashamed.
At Grover T. Muldoon asked, will the eventual erotic fan fiction novel about Mertesacker and Giroud sharing together, will that be in the Emporium?
Maybe.
I just imagine a whole lot of soap dropping, Grover, to be honest.
A Frenchman dominating a German.
Hiddink had said before the game, we will find out where we belong. I mean, in truth, this was not an impressive Chelsea.
It
was a safer Chelsea, with elements like Costa and Cesc restored to three-quarter power, and a late Hazard willing cameo, which suggests he might want to give a mild crap in the final third of the season, if only to play his way into a transfer, David.
Now you've got Diego on form, he's scoring goals. Fabregas and Willian seem to be finding a way to play in front of Mikel. Matic even came to life a little bit in this game. Chelsea's issues are still shipping goals. Courtois does not look the confident goalkeeper we expected him to gradually grow into in the Premier League. He still looks very dodgy on the high ball. He drops the ball a lot, which is worrying.
Fantastic.
Defensively, Chelsea look comical at times.
For Arsenal, a fantastic performance with 10 men, but noble failure doesn't win you titles, because if it did, Everton would be a dynasty. One win in four for Arsene Wenger's team, and the haunting knowledge that once again, evil always wins.
Yeah. And karma does not exist, Roger. Okay, let's talk about the leaders. Leicester, 3. Stoke, 0. The Foxes officially enter their Rocky IV phase. Even though the writers want us to believe that they're the underdogs, we now expect them to win. Goals from Danny Drinkwater, Jamie Vardy and Leonardo Ochoa see Claudio Ranieri's men reclaim their role as King of the Mountain.
Oh, reports of Leicester City's demise were greatly exaggerated. Entering the game with one win in five, Leicester were meant to be losing their potency in front of goal. Vardy and Mahrez were meant to be spent. And here they hosted fellow underdog European contenders, Stoke City. And they were meant to be tested. But it turned out to be an impressive, narrative-defying signature win. Stoke, perhaps with one eye on this week's League Cup semi-final against Liverpool, they couldn't live with Leicester's ebullient, cohesive team play right from the off. And trying for rotation by resting Arnautovic and Boyan, they really offered little. It was Danny Drinkwater who opened the scoring.
Yeah, fantastic goal. Any other week would say, what a good goal.
Really?
Because of Dele Alli's goal scored from almost the same position with a much more impressive turn, flick, nod, volley.
Yeah.
Danny Drinkwater,
we know you listen to the pod. Next time you get the ball on the edge of the area, think about chipping it up over your head and then volleying it right into the corner instead of taking that less fancy way to get the same end result, would you, mate?
The second goal, Rog, though, vintage Vardy. And as you said yesterday, when we say vintage, we mean from earlier in the season. Runs on to a long ball, beats the defender, just actually kills him for pace. Rounds the keeper, knocks it in. Jack Butland suddenly I think Jack Butland will look back at that and think he didn't do a very good job.
And the third late on, scored by Ulloa, but made by Mahrez with
an exquisite nutmeg
and Shass. Those handles, though.
Yeah.
Would have been less embarrassing if he just pulled the Stokes defender's pants down around his knees. And so Leicester City, their informal social media partnership with the Carolina Panthers going from strength to strength.
Mm.
They keep pounding back to the top of the table. In the post-match, a beaming Claudio Ranieri was asked by reporters if he considered it a failure for his team to now fail to qualify for the Champions League. He said he will now allow the club's fans to dream. They are 10 points, Davo, 10 points ahead of Manchester United in fifth place. Should we be talking now about a title charge for Real as opposed to a top 4 place for Real?
Absolutely. They're in great position, and actually their schedule looks somewhat favourable. Not only the teams they've got to play, but also how few games they've got to play. Producer Zips showed us this wonderful chart that they've only got 15 games to play. They're out of the FA Cup. They're out of the Capital One Cup, Cup. They're not in Europe. They've got 15 total games to play between now and the end of the season. Their rivals for the title have more than 20, each of them. It could be as close to 30 if they remain in the European competitions.
29 at max.
Yeah.
But you look at this, you're Leicester City, and you're thinking 15 games to focus on. 15 games, 45 points to play for, a 10-point buffer from the Champions League. I say, for them not to get into the Champions League, we are nearing the point where it would be a choke of Jean van der Velde 1999 British Open Championship levels, or the New York Yankees in the 2004 ALCS. 3 points clear, though. 15 games to go. In each of the past 12 Premier League seasons, the team top of the table at this stage has ultimately won the title. But we've already said this is the most unorthodox Premier League season of all time.
Yeah, and the last team outside the sort of, you know, the regular big four, big five to lead at this stage was Newcastle United 1995-1996, and they did fold towards the end of the season. They got chased down.
Three massive games ahead for Leicester City. They face Liverpool, who won the Anfield fixture 1-0. Then they go to Manchester City and head right off to Arsenal.
A six-pointer.
We seem to say this every week for Leicester City. The next three or four games are going to be the moment of truth for them, and they keep defying our expectations. Long may that continue.
Okay, Rog, all of those games very important on paper. But the biggest game of this last weekend came from East Anglia, Rog. Norwich 4, Liverpool 5, a 9-goal thriller, a game with so many goals to recap. It sees Jurgen Klopp's men snatch a winner in the 95th minute, less than 3 minutes after Norwich tied the game at 4. Have we ever seen so many games in which more than one goal are scored in injury time? It's cray-cray.
And this was the best, worst game of football I have ever seen in my life. The condiment derby was, as Sarah Palin would call it, a squirmish.
Love that word.
It was magnificent to watch, but the quality of the football was terrible. It's like that old Yiddish joke about a low-rent tailor who advertises his services as, never mind the quality, just feel the width. And this was a game that was fantastic and diabolical in equal measure. It was like watching an explosion at a fireworks factory, Davo. Jurgen Klopp summed it up later when he admitted, we were rubbish.
Yeah. But they were rubbish, but they won the game. Teams traded goals in the opening half hour, Rog, 1-1. Norwich went ahead with your old friend, Stephen Naismith, getting on the score sheet for Norwich, putting them up 2-1, Rog.
Yeah, Norwich new boy, Stevie Naismith, making his debut. Translucent Messi, the most beautiful yellow thing had set eyes on since the tiny bananas in Brazil. He was running around the field. He looked like the ultimate colourblind test. I loved watching him trot around the field with the menace of an animal that's mid-level in the food chain like an Angora goat. And he did. He changed the game. Liverpool defend in the most token half-hearted fashion. I mean, the first goal, the umbercanny flick. I mean, watching Liverpool defend corners, it's like seeing two teens park their car in a remote lover's lane in a slasher movie. Don't do it. Don't do it, Liverpool. But the Naismith goal, I mean, the way they defended in the most half-hearted of fashion, it was what we now call gegen-depressing. And Naismith, even in yellow, it remains scientifically true, Davo.
Yeah.
What you cannot see, you cannot defend.
Yeah.
You Are My Arsenal tweeted me to say, a little part of you died when Stephen Naismith moved on, didn't it, Rog? And I'd say back, whatever part of me died, Dave, came to life again when I watched that goal. He's 29. I understand totally his desire to start. I will always love Stephen Naismith, who's a magical bloke. And it would get worse for Liverpool because Mourinho hacked down Naismith in the area, got away with it, and so he did it right again.
Yeah.
Penalty, 3-1 Norwich.
Yeah.
Surely game over.
Yeah, no, but Liverpool, they certainly are a team that know how to fight. They get one back, 55th minute. Hendo puts the ball in the back of the net, Rog.
It was really the introduction of Adam Lallana that changed the game. He became a connection between midfield attack, a heartbeat, a drive. And the game just became, as you said, cray-cray. Both teams bilaterally deciding to stop defending. At one point, there were 5 shots on goal and 5 goals. Firmino with a poetic pass, Henderson with a finish, then the equaliser, 5 touches by 4 players. The poetry in motion that Liverpool fans write ballads about, although they'd suffered for their art on this morning. Yeah. When that goal went in, Davo.
Firmino's goal.
Yeah, when that goal went in, Jurgen Klopp on the sideline did his old fist spear.
Yeah.
We were talking about if Brendan Rodgers
celebrated. Yeah, it would have been all about him. Oh, typical Brendan, making it all about him.
Yeah, we would have laughed. We would have mocked. We would have derided him.
Mm.
Context is everything from managerial over-enthusiastic goal celebrations.
Yeah.
Liverpool soon celebrated again.
Yeah.
Milner running him.
Yeah, terrible back pass from Russell Martin. Milner intercepts it. You know, not sure how confident anybody felt looking at Milner going one-on-one with the keeper, but Milner and his Boyle. Rog, that's actually 2-on-1. Managed to combine to like put the ball in the back of the net.
But it was just, all of it, a amuse-bouche for the climax, David, which was as close as Premier League football will ever get to aping the end of an NBA game, trading baskets.
Yeah, it was crazy because, first of all, the referee's assistant put about 21 minutes in injury time on the clock and Jurgen went crazy. He was in a really, really foul mood at that point. Norwich, of course, find a way from a set piece, put the long ball into the area. Cameron Jerome gets on the end of it, knocks it down. Sebastian Bassong knocks it in to the back of the net, 4-4. And you just felt, oh, no, terrible. Jurgen was losing it on the sideline at this point.
It was Teutonic rage. But 142 seconds later, cue bipolar mood swing. Lallana, never underestimate the power of a man desperate to show the world his terrible chest tattoo.
Yeah.
It's the world's greatest motivator.
Yeah, he bounced it in, Rog. I love that, bouncing it in.
I think terrible tattoos motivate men even more than the capitalist imperative of financial reward, David.
No, I don't know about that.
He slapped it in off the ground and bedlam ensued. Klopp reenacting this dirty dancing run and jump lift. Baby, come to Johnny! And Lallana running down the line with his flappy old nipples. Very old nipples.
It was sort of like he'd seen Alexis Sanchez do his thing. It wasn't Sanchez's body that was running it. And Lallana doesn't look like he's got a lot of body fat, but there was quite a lot of movement.
It looked like he'd bought his nipples secondhand from a flea market sale somewhere down by the canal.
Yeah.
They're like these flappy little pouches.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked like a young Pamela Anderson in the opening credits.
Yeah.
Of Baywatch. And then there was just an orgasmic pile-on of Liverpool joy.
Yeah.
Christian Benteke arriving late, punching his own manager in the face.
Hit the target.
Yeah, first time he has done that in 4 games, Davey. The smash glasses. Liverpool's transfer committee, rumoured to be in to sign both Warby and Parker.
Great vision.
Before the transfer window shuts on Monday. But what a climax, Davey. Klopp telling the press, I usually have a second pair of glasses, but I can't find them because it's hard to find glasses without glasses. If he wasn't a manager, he'd be a
stand-up.
Be amazing. Never mind that. He'd be great in sitcoms for canned laughter.
Do you remember there used to be that German stand-up comic? I just want to say this is around the end of the 1980s, beginning of the 90s in London. There was a German stand-up comic who worked the comedy circuit. And his best joke, he's come out very deadpan humour. And after about 3 jokes, he'd look at the audience and say, we have ways of making you laugh. Klopp could be a very successful German stand-up.
Was more successful than that bloke by the sound of it.
It's good.
But what a finish. Frenetic nature, the conclusion, the joys dashed, the just general incompetence. Watching at home, I just imagine both Norwich and Liverpool fans covered in beer and joy and despair and rhapsody and darkness. Game was like watching the Mountain and the Viper do battle in Game of Thrones. Yeah. Only it was impossible to tell which team was the Mountain and which was the Viper because they both just kept exchanging roles.
It could be a very significant result for both teams as well. Liverpool still with those top four aspirations, you know, trying to chase down Tottenham in fourth place. And Norwich desperately trying to find their way out of the relegation zone. It could be a desperate loss of a point there.
At SoCal Peter LFC tweeted, watching this game, I woke up at 4:40 a.m. for this. Watching it, I feel like I'm being tortured for information I do not have. But Liverpool fans, they persuaded themselves Jurgen Klopp is like a master chef who's making an extraordinary confection out of assorted leftovers he's just found in the fridge. Liverpool win or lose are just thrilling to watch. They're like a manic labradoodle when it's first let off the leash in the park. But the more personality brings in, Davo, and right now Liverpool are heavily linked with Alex Teixeira of Shakhtar Donetsk, the more he's going to be held accountable for performances like this.
Okay, from stunning crap football, Rog, to slightly less stunning crap football. Man United 0, Southampton 1. Oh. Discontent among Old Trafford's proletariat rises to previously unknown levels. Louis van Gaal's side register just one shot on goal. And that was from a long way out, and capitulate an 87th minute winner to the heavily gelled head of the Saints' new signing, Charlie Austin. Rog.
I've got to say, watching Manchester United play right after the ebullient nipple tingle was Norwich Liverpool.
Yeah.
It was like leaving the welcoming embrace of a sauna and jumping into a punishing ice cold plunge bath down at the Schwitz, Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, they are the antonym of aphrodisiac. At footy from afar, tweeted us to say, I bet there's someone out there with a denial fetish who really loves this team, different strokes and all that. I'm sure there's a couple of congressmen who like the austere punishing treatment that was doled out on Saturday morning, Davo. But if we were not getting paid,
it's
you
like
know,
the opening scene in Billions.
if we were not, that's the greatest soap opera on television. That's the soapiest show I've ever watched.
I watched the opening episode last night. I enjoyed it.
It's honestly, it's like Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
But of hedge funders.
I know. If we were not, 1%.
If we were not getting paid, David, you know, our $1 million contract, I'd find it very hard to watch Manchester United right now.
Yeah, it's actually a clause in our $1 million contract that we have to.
They haven't scored a first half goal at home now in 11 games. And the way they play, they just cause drowsiness.
Yeah.
Don't operate heavy machinery while watching Louis van Gaal's team.
So hard to figure out exactly what's going on. Daily Blint with the one shot on goal.
In the 13th minute, their requisite one shot per game. They wasted it.
Yeah, from about 67 yards. Trying to beat from distance the largest goalkeeper in the history of goalkeepers, Fraser Forster. I'm not even sure that he's human, Fraser Forster. He's so large.
And that was it. LVG looked on with the demeanour of Lord Business.
Yeah.
Believing imagination to be weird and messy in
a
world of order.
We've never called him Lord Business before. That's so right on.
Anyone with creativity is my enemy.
Yeah.
He's become like a figure in a cartoon who knows that a circle is being sawed into the floorboards around him.
Yeah.
As reports of the club beginning to desperately beg Pep Guardiola to come, of transfer war chest suddenly being withheld, of Gareth Bale saying no to United because of the current predicament, and the highlight of the second half of the game, a mouse trotting on the field.
Yeah, that was good.
A symbolic rat leaving the sinking ship.
Yeah.
I mean, the longer the game went on, you just knew the Premier League writers intended for debutant Charlie Austin, a striker who cost $5.7 million to undo the $360 million worth of new signings LVG had amounted.
Yeah, 79th minute, he comes on. The other sub, James Ward-Prowse, he came on a little earlier. 87th minute, James Ward-Prowse with one of those fantastic set-piece deliveries. Another very, very good young England player, Rog, puts it in the box. Charlie Austin, bam! Well done, scriptwriters.
I remember once reading about a family of billionaires in New York who lost two of the $3 billion they had.
Wow.
In a series of dreadful, just truly awful financial transactions.
Yeah.
Inc. magazine wrote an article where they asked if a monkey had managed that family's money over the same time period, would the family have lost as much money? In that spirit, I ask you, if a monkey had been installed as United's manager, could it have made them this dreadful if given as much time as LVG, David?
That's no way to talk about Ryan Giggs.
Ryan Giggs. By the way, I wonder,
he's hairy, but I wouldn't call him a monkey.
I wonder what goes on in his mind during games. He just has a face on him that's like, I'm only here to take over
he's
for
really
Van Gaal.
Not present.
When he gets beheaded in the public square. Isn't that how Game of Thrones is meant to work?
Yeah, he's really not present. And sort of present at the same time. It's very interesting.
And the peculiarities of United Stadium architecture
that
position the tunnel 40 yards from the bench, which means LVG. I mean, if he was at Goodison Park, he'd just leave the, at Chelsea, you just leave the bench and go down the tunnel, you're gone.
But why doesn't he do an arc? Why doesn't he walk out onto the field and go back that way?
Why does
he always insist on walking straight down the line?
I mean, LVG, I think this was put there during the glory days of Sir Alex, so Alex could do like a triumphal lap after winning games after game. LVG has to run the gauntlet of the fans on a walk of shame post-game. Yeah. It's the most excruciating scene I've seen on my television since Cersei Lannister's punishing, humiliating trek from the Great Sept to the Red Keep. Shame, shame, shame. I just thought, David Blatt, I suddenly feel your pain. Valor more goalless, LVG. Luke Walton is available. It's all going to crap, Dave. I wanted to win this game, but they scored, so we lost. In better or for worse, we have to stick together. I failed the supporters, he admitted. Reports say he resigned after the game, an offer United didn't immediately accept because they are caught in a quandary. Who should replace him? Explain, Dave. Solve their problems.
Tough. It's tough to explain. Obviously, Jose Mourinho wants the job very, very badly. No one at Man United seems to want him, but the rumour is not going away. There must be something going on behind the scenes that keeps that alive, that keeps Mourinho's agent chomping at the bit, trying to make the phone calls, trying to get Edward Woodward to go and sign him up. But I don't know what they do. You know, they're still in touch enough. They're still just 5 points. They're still in fifth. They're just 5 points out of the top four. And yet, they're one of 10 teams within 9 points between fifth and 14th place.
Mourinho,
they could be in a relegation fight as well as they could be into the top four.
I'd love it if they did both at the same time. Mourinho is the best available. After Moyes and LVG, United needs stability, and Jose is yet to last for more than four seasons before scorched earthing a club into near destruction.
Yeah, although I mean, it's so interesting in all the press reports right now about Jose Mourinho, if he's learned his lesson. There's got to be so much messaging of the press right now of he's learned his lesson, the six-page letter. If we could just get the six-page letter that Mourinho wrote to Man United, I would want that so badly.
I'm sure
I want it more than one of AVB's PowerPoints.
I'm sure it's just his arse on a photocopier six times, David. By the way, nicer news for United.
Yeah.
Wayne Rooney and his wife Colleen, they had a third son this week.
Oh, bless.
And they are trying to become like the Manchester Kardashians.
Mm.
They have named their third with a letter K.
Yeah.
Baby Kit, joining brothers Kai and Clay.
Yeah.
A trio of K names, David. Yeah. I'd love to sit in on their naming conversations.
Yeah.
Kibbutz.
Mm.
Kegel.
Mm.
After my favourite exercise. Why don't they call him Killer Diggins Rooney?
Yeah.
After Nashville's greatest working recording artist, Mr. Dave Barnes.
Yeah, could happen.
I suppose they're not called one of them Kev.
Yeah.
What are the odds of that, David?
I know. Running with the Roonies is going to be coming. It's about 15 years' time. You know that's going to be on BBC 7.
Subtitled.
Channel 9. Yeah, heavily subtitled. It will just be mimed. They won't even bother subtitling it. Nobody will be able to understand what they were saying. Okay, Rog. West Ham 2, Manchester City 2. 2 goals apiece from Ener Valencia and Sergio Aguero. See the team split the spoils at Upton Park. The point is good enough to move City into second place. West Ham is sixth, only 6 points off the top four.
Big question for City going into the game.
Yeah.
Touré or Delph? Delph or Touré? They went Touré and Delph.
Interesting.
Yeah, I said on the show,
Delph Touré.
Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan's chemistry was better in 50 Shades, David.
Yeah, that's an awful thing.
And we saw it within 53 seconds.
Mm.
Delph gives too much of a damn, if that's possible.
Yeah.
Tracking back like a madman.
Yeah.
And Yaya, he just seems to delight in making it clear he couldn't give a crap at all.
Yeah.
Walloping around the midfield.
Yeah, static doesn't seem enough of a word to describe his defending.
Neither he nor Delph picked up Valencia, who thrashed home the early ricocheting ball around the box.
But not long after, Sergio Aguero puts the team's level after being fouled by Jenkinson in the penalty area.
And Kun Aguero dispatched clinically. But West Ham, Dave, they are one of the delights of the season when in full flow. Dimitri Payet.
Yeah.
He's more than a footballer.
Yeah.
He's an innovator.
Yeah.
He's a veritable footballing entrepreneur.
Mm.
Winston Reid locks down the back. New signing Sam Byram, competent on his debut. And Alex Song excelling in his tighty-whities as if stolen from the John Stockton for Men collection. And it was Valencia who restored West Ham's lead.
Fantastic. From a long throw-in, which I love a goal from a throw-in. We don't see enough of them. Gets right onto it and just puts Joe Hart into a slightly compromising position as he knocks the ball past him.
Well, Otamendi seemed to be doing his hair in the build-up, and City laboured by playing Kevin De Bruyne and a strangely there in body but not in mind David Silva with Aguero ahead of them. Pellegrini just seems to be shoving all of his stars into the team rather than creating a tactically cohesive mesh. And it was telling that it needed Iheanacho to come on and change the game.
Drives into the heart of the West Ham defence. Ball falls to Sergio Aguero, knocks it in, 2-2.
Even then, West Ham hit the bar with a final touch of the game when Payet hit the head of Coyate with a perfectly placed free kick, leaving Crazy Joe helpless. And we can say West Ham on form, fantastic. But with their talent, Manchester City should be able to win on the road. They've now won one in their last nine away. And they've got to be wondering, City, why are they not 5 or 6 points ahead at the table right now with the talent they've got, Dave? No side, I'd say, have gotten less out of more, and that includes United.
Yeah, you know, the word boring gets used a lot in football. You know, used about boring Chelsea last year. This season, the word boring seems to have been applied to Manchester United a lot more, including by some of their former players. But I've got to tell you, Manchester City, for a team who can be so electrifying, it's amazing how boring watching them can also become. Okay, Rog, Crystal Palace 1, Tottenham 3. A scoreline that will long be forgotten decades from now when Englishmen and women gather their grandchildren around the fire to tell them the tale of Dele Alli's wondrous 84th minute winner. In the short term, the result keeps Spurs just 5 points off Leicester and moves them within 2 of City and Arsenal. But that goal, Rog, do we have to talk about anything else? Can we just talk about that goal?
Are you talking about Jan Vertonghen's own goal?
Yeah, no, it was amazing.
Oh, it was. I'd say amazing for Crystal Palace fans. It was their first Premier League goal since December the 19th. Mm. Palace haven't won a game since Yannick Bolasie was injured on Boxing Day. And this Spurs team, even though they were 1-0 down, they've shown that they have more fight in them, Davo, than their predecessors were stereotypically alleged to lack. Harry Kane tied the game with a soft goal.
Yeah.
And then the Dele Alli show.
Oh, amazing. Ball comes in from the right, from Harry Kane. Eriksen heads it to Dele Alli. Like any other player is going to take a touch, try and get it
under
control.
Any other Danny Drinkwater.
Yeah, exactly. He takes the touch by volleying it over his own head. He meets it on the other side, spins 180, and bam, connects, puts it into the back of the net. Fantastic.
Sporting poetry. I mean, it should be said, Palace is defending slightly comedic. If you look at the goal, just look at how Jed Knapp makes a hilarious effort to head a ball that's no longer there as Ali's flicked it over its back.
Yeah.
But my question, Dave, how does an Englishman even have the ability to conceive of doing this? The kind of act which previously was only in the playbook of Zlatan or any member of Brazil's 1970 World Cup team.
Well, we definitely need to check the passport. Roger, we need to check he's actually British, but he's also very young. He's only 19 years old, Roger. He hasn't learned about being British yet. He hasn't been oppressed, and he's coming up with so many good young English players. You haven't felt the pressure of playing with, you know, the heavy shirt, the chainmail, of the English jersey. They haven't felt it yet, and he's just playing. He's just loving his football. That is a goal scored by someone who simply loves and kisses football.
Yeah, I mean, to have the vision, the audacity to try and execute it and then to pull it off.
Yeah.
The question now, how great can he be? He's only 19. Mm.
Roy Hodgson will knock it out of him.
Yeah. I mean, it all depends on how he lives. We're joking, but there's going to be incredible pressure and expectation thrown on him now by the English tabloids with Euro 2016 drumbeat beginning to bang.
Yeah, already those stories have started. There are a lot of stories about his upbringing and his adoptive family and his real mom and everything in the press when I was over there.
After Glenn Fryer, the Eagles died, I watched the Eagles documentary on Netflix. Band member and hedonistic madman Joe Walsh said about fame, he said, the first thing that happens is that you get some kind of label and you got to live up to it. And you just get caught up in that. And I forget what the second thing is. Dele Alli is going to be living Joe Walsh's life from now on, David.
Yeah.
At Kevin G715, Alli power rankings, tied for first place.
Yeah.
Dele.
Yeah.
And Alli Krieger.
Yeah.
Number 3, Mohammed.
Yeah.
Mohammed Alli.
Alli Sheedy didn't even make the list. I'm amazed.
I think he's just been elbowed out by Dele, David.
Awful.
Understandably, but controversially.
Yeah.
At Ethan Barbie 10, this dude is 19. what am I doing with my life? Hashtag come on, you Spurs.
Yeah.
Ali then hit the post with another delicious drive before Spurs.
Oh my God, that was unbelievable.
Wrapped up the game. They remind me, Dave, of Liverpool 2 years ago, starting to win games with confidence and a sense of acrobatic athleticism.
Yeah. A total team, you know, total team. You've got to say Leicester are the same way, but a total team. So strong at the back. I think this Vertonghen injury is not good for them. But so good from Lloris all the way through. Just wonderful players. And seeing this spine of this team with Eric Dier and Dele Alli and Harry Kane, all sort of young England players, players for years to come. It's going to be interesting to see how exactly Roy Hodgson and the FA knocked this out of them.
The ongoing Philadelphia 76ification of Crystal Palace sadly continues. Mm. They've lost all four of their Premier League games since the turn of 2016. Mm. Goal difference minus 10. Desperate times, desperate measures. They signed this morning Emmanuel Adebayor.
Interesting.
The Premier League equivalent of bringing in Latrell Sprewell or Adam Pac-Man Jones. Godspeed.
Okay, Rod. Sunderland 1, Bournemouth 1. Patrick Van Aanholt's first half injury time strike salvages a point for Big Sam's men who fell behind to a Benik Afobe header. Bournemouth in 16th, 4 points clear of the drop. Sunderland in 19th, 4 points shy of safety.
Afobe, I love that goal. He headed it where it actually would have been easier to kick it. He had to stoop so low.
Except he seemed to head it harder than any man could kick it.
He reminded me of Andy Gray when he played for Everton, who just loved to get his head on everything. Even crosses that were an inch off the floor, he'd fling his head at them. And they'd always joke about Andy Gray that if he was forced to take a penalty, he'd try and head it.
Watford 2, Newcastle 1. Odion Ighalo's 14th goal of the season helps put the Hornets past Steve McLaren's men at Vicarage Road. Only Jamie Vardy and Romelu Lukaku have scored more goals than the 26-year-old Nigerian this season. Watford in 10th, Newcastle stay 18th, 2 points from safety. West Bromwich Albion, 0. Aston Villa, 0. A Midlands derby that had Sky Bet Championship written all over it. The goalless draw moves Tony Pulis's men to 28 points, 12 short of their desired 40. Villa still 10 points from safety.
And that's it for the week.
No, Everton 1, Swansea 2. In an effort to claim back his spot as the not-crap AU brother, Andre scores the winner in Swansea manager Francesco Guidolin's debut. Over to you, Rogelio.
Sometimes the turd emoticon is just too much praise for a team's performance. They need to develop a new kind of emoticon.
A turdier turd.
What is sub-turd?
Probably sub-turd.
You could probably go with a bigger one, a sloppy one. I don't know.
Yeah.
GFOPs, please solve that problem.
Yeah. Turd times pie.
Apple executives that are doing the emoticons are probably already putting plans together to do a ginger turd or something. Yeah. Stop it now,
Apple. Yeah, that's anti-ginger.
It's not okay.
Yeah.
But Swansea entered this game with 3 wins in the last 20, just one away, win in 11 games. The kind of form that gave me a pang of doom ahead of kickoff, Dave. And so it came to pass. Swansea, 2 shots, 2 goals.
Mm.
Everton hit the post early, but then John Stones over-elaborated as only John Stones can right now. He does these Johan Cruyff turns.
Yeah.
And the only things that's surprising about them is when he actually doesn't do one.
Yeah.
And AU press Stones. He dumped the ball like a third grader right at his goalkeeper in panic. And poor Tim Howard.
Yeah.
Was just left high and dry. Penalty ensued. As he somehow elected to kick IU. It's not Tim's fault. Let's make this clear.
Uh-huh.
But such is Tim Howard's standing with a portion of the Everton fans right now.
That meaning all of them.
That a bunch of the fans started to chant, off, 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 at the referee. Oh. In the hope that their own goalkeeper would be red carded. It broke my heart.
It's meant to be America's team, Rog. It's meant to be America's team. This is the US national team hero goalkeeper. Something's wrong.
Well, I can make you feel proud, America.
Yeah.
No player's given away more penalties in the Premier League since August 2013 than our own Tim Howard. He's equal, actually, with Southampton's Font.
Yeah.
Everton equalised via an own goal, but then IU spanked the ball past Howard with a deflection off John Stones, who, it should be said, had a bit of a Jan Kirkhoff.
Yeah.
22nd goal Everton have conceded at home. Sloppy, self-destructive crap. And right at the end, Coleman missed at the death from point-blank range. Even Chris Wondolowski was like, dude!
Mm.
Swansea City win their first ever game at Everton. A debut win for new coach Francesco Guidolin.
Yeah.
Who looks like a dead ringer for Stannis Baratheon of the House Baratheon, first of his name, King of the Andals and the first Men Lord of the Seven Kingdoms and Protector of the Realm.
Wow.
And on one hand, Everton fans, you've complained about how we've had too many draws. You got your wish today. Stop complaining. Mm. But 6 wins in 23, one win in 10, 12th in the lead, Davey.
Yeah, 1 point ahead of Chelsea.
3 home wins all season. How can a talent-rich squad be this mediocre?
Yeah, well, they're conceding a lot of goals. That's the reason why, Rog. They've conceded 34 times. They've scored 40, which is amazing. They've conceded 34 times.
Well, the heat is turning up under Roberto Martinez. And here's what worries me, Davey. Mm. At BlazerCon, I asked him when he expected this team would peak. And he said, late January. If Everton get battered in Wednesday's League Cup semi-final second leg, as my gut and my pie tells me we will, it can get...
And all of your self-protection mechanisms.
Yeah, those two. It could get a bit ugly. This game, though, it made me ponder the question of why do we watch? Mm. Why do we watch for 90 minutes? Mm. What makes us sit there? What compels us when the players barely try? When Lukaku looks like a man who's called his agent up at half-time and asked to get out of there?
Yeah.
Why do we sit and still suffer voluntarily?
Probably because of what happens when your team play really well. And Lukaku, and moments after Lukaku win another one and Lukaku scores, and you look at me and say, who would you rather have now, Davo? Would you rather have Lukaku or Diego? And then it switches the other way and you watch your team beat Arsenal again and you just love football. We watch because we never know what the script writers are going to have in store for us, Rog.
If I hadn't thought about taking that screenshot of me with my bald head below the screen and John Terry scoring that own goal.
Yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow sliding doors
that
might have projected
another
future.
Karma does not exist. Karma does not exist, Rod. It does not exist. It's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay.
Heal me, Doctor. Heal me.
Everton have never gone down. It's not going to happen this year, Rod. Over to MLS.
It's the best league in the world.
Yeah.
In America.
Yeah. Well, we'll see about that. Some big MLS news this week. Rod, Arsenal legend Patrick Vieira arrives in the United States. Chelsea legend Didier Drogba returns and America's Jordan Morris stays. He's officially signed with his hometown club, the Seattle Sounders.
Oh, Vieira, smart appointment from one perspective. As a former English Premier League legend, the English media are now going to follow NYCFC even more closely and MLS more than ever.
Yeah,
it's like having a DP on the field, but it's going to be fascinating to watch him adapt to the jerry-rigged realities of MLS.
Yeah.
And this is a test of the powers that be at Manchester City and how much they're willing to admit they don't know about MLS. What does Vieira know about allocations, about drafts, about TAM payments, and the need in this league to not so much win with stars, which is what NYCFC have in abundance, but to find the balance of bargains across the field. It's a league where you create value and find a collective kind of bargain in which aging superstars just get bogged down like Russians against the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the 1980s.
Yeah.
What fascinated me, his first thing he did, Vieira, he met with NYCFC fans at a town hall meeting and asked them for their feedback. Can you imagine Tony Pulis taking over the West Brom job?
Yeah.
Just going to go meet with fans, get a bit of a two-way conversation.
They're not football people.
And then he told the media he'd like to model his managing style after both Mourinho and Wenger fuse their styles into one.
That's a love child. Call
it it's a Frankenstein's monster, mate.
Yeah.
I'd never wish that on myself.
I know, it'd be tough.
If you could fuse two people together to be you, who would it be?
To be me?
Yeah. He's saying, I'm going to take Wenger, hopefully the best bits.
Yeah.
The jeans, the stylish stuff, the Mourinho.
Yeah.
Who would you want if you were given the choice?
Well, Churchill always gets one of them. And maybe my favourite footballer of all time, Jeff
Kelly
Merrick.
LeBrock.
Jeff Merrick of Bristol City, circa 1975, 1976, that model.
That would be a combo.
Ball-playing centre-back, that's what I'd like to be.
Mine would be a mixture of Cameron from Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
And Hansi from Fargo 2 into one beautiful package. Didier Drogba will return to Montreal, though it's not sure for how long.
Yeah,
it's unclear to me who is in control of this situation. Impact's owner Joey Saputo announced he is coming back, but when asked if he'd play the whole season, he said, I can't answer that. There's an expectation, but we have to start preparing ourselves, quote, for the post-Didier Drogba era. I've got to say, to me, it's more disrespectful to MLS that they have no idea how long he's coming back for. No real information is flowing out that's definitive, rather than him just retiring mid-contract and returning to Chelsea, which kind of makes rational sense. Mm. No one knowing shows who's got the leverage. Just pull off the Band-Aid and let the man go.
Well, I think a lot of sport is unfortunately like this, Rog. And Jordan Morris, big story.
Massive story, David.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved his statement. It was a childhood dream of mine to play for the Sounders. He talked about how he remembers going to see them when he was young. Amazing thing to say. I wanted to be on that field someday. He's going to get $225,000 per year. He's a proud sculpt for MLS in their ongoing dirty war against Jurgen Klinsmann and his rationally correct predilection for American talent to learn abroad. But for Jordan Morris, Dave, this has got to be a smart move, right?
Oh, I mean, on so many levels. And we can talk about lifestyle. We can talk about, you know, the fan support. We can talk about the narrative. A particularly well-run franchise that up in Seattle. And I can't wait to see him play.
I'm sure it would have been tempting to stay at Bremen, but to move from being the man at college to being at best a sub and at worst a second team prospect. Yeah, Einman. It's an incredibly hard. I remember spending time with Landon Donovan during his last months in MLS, and he still talked about what it was like to go to Leverkusen age 17 and the culture shock he had from being the guy in the United States to just being a trout in the trout farm, a grunt. He said he wasn't psychologically prepared. He didn't understand anything, and it set his career back. Morris can make the college transition calmly. He can be loved. His father's the club surgeon. He knows Seattle. He can focus on breaking through into that first team and developing his game in the bosom of those that love him.
Okay, Jordan Morris is among the U.S. men's national team players at camp in Southern California preparing for the team's upcoming friendlies against Iceland and Canada. Both games will be played at the StubHub Center. The game against Iceland is this Sunday at 3:45 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN2, Rog. And talking of national team, the U.S. women have already logged their first game of 2016. They beat Ireland 5-0 Sunday in San Diego behind... Way too hot for them, San Diego, in January, Rog. Behind a hat-trick in the first 28 minutes from, who else, FIFA Player of the Year, Carly Lloyd. Alex Morgan and 17-year-old debutante Mallory Pugh added goals 4 and 5. Next up for the U.S. women's national team, the Olympic qualifying tournament in Texas, beginning February the 10th.
Congratulations to Sydney LaRue and her husband Dom Dwyer, who announced they're going to give birth to the future hopes of US soccer in September 2016. Both fantastic human beings. We wish them happiness and health, courage.
Our first Raven is from Garrett from Atlanta. At this point in the season, given the standings, I keep having this thought in my head. Are the script writers writing this season, or have the teams read the script and decided they don't like it this year and decided to improv this whole thing? Please let me know how the madness is unfurling.
I just think the scriptwriters have developed a growing addiction to cocaine and nitrous oxide.
Yeah.
How else can you explain it, Davey? Maybe it could be to do with the fact that there's now so much money in the game, that the levels of English money have gotten to such exorbitant amounts that parity has been instilled in the Premier League in the most bizarre way, not by controlling or restricting cash flows like American sport, but by making sure there's so much swilling around that every club's become its own Willy Wonka factory with its own chocolate lake.
Yeah, no, it's impossible. You look at the fixtures for each team for the rest of the season and you just don't know. Usually you've been able to look and say, okay, it's 3 points there. You know, the worst we're going to get out of that is a draw. It's just impossible this season. So many teams jammed up. I sort of look at a little bit in game theory. You know, when you construct a game show, you sort of build an opening round where the points are low. You then have various mechanisms in Act 2 to keep it close. And then in Act 3... you sort of have catch-up mechanisms where you double the points or you triple the points to go and make it better. I think we should really consider tripling the points in this final third of the season. I think it would be excellent.
So speaketh the producer of the Pyramid Game.
Yeah, it would be good. Okay, Rog, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet Philosopher Soccer Scribe Raven of the Week is Jonathan Schwab in New Hampshire.
I love America.
Interesting state, New Hampshire. I've been watching the EPL intently for a few seasons now and have become fascinated with the career tracks of managers. I'm amazed at the revolving door some managers have with clubs. Harry Redknapp, Mark Hughes, Big Sam. Don't the clubs who are hiring them know their track record? With the exception of a few, most seem to understand and be okay with the fact that they will be lucky to survive in their jobs for longer than 18 months. I'm really interested in what happens to managers after they've been sacked. Where do they go? Do they immediately sell their house? What do they do with all the team gear and swag that they own? Does it all end up in the trash? After a manager is sacked, do they still grocery shop in the same location? Do managers have survival shelters for this waiting period before it's okay to be seen in public, the same way that many in Montana do for the end of the world? If either of you became managers and were inevitably sacked within the first month of the season, what would you do for the month following? Interesting.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
I mean, Sam Allardyce once said, son,
yeah,
you won't be a proper manager until you've been sacked.
Yeah.
They love it. Managers love it. I mean, on one level, we know the pain and the public humiliation of the tabloid trial towards the end. And if we were watching Louis van Gaal's death rattle, it looks excruciating. I love your idea, Jonathan, of a manager suddenly at home with their lives shattered like a character in a Kenneth Lonergan movie with nothing but time on their hands, just standing there, sadly opening a wardrobe packed with tracksuits with their initials on them over the breast. But the honest truth is twofold. I mean, nowadays, a major part of a manager's reaction to being fired is just choreographed by PR handlers. Jose Mourinho, he made a point of going out to watch football games and be seen out in public with his dog the day after leaving Chelsea to show he was ready for business, his pride wasn't dented, it was all business. But I think were I a manager, and I still aspire to be one with Davo, we'd be co-managers in the Taylor and Clough model of joint management, Davo.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah. Who would be the good cop?
Me.
Okay. Oh.
Sorry, Roger's too depressed to talk to you today.
Slightly
Roger was meant to give the team talk, but he's reading a book about the Holocaust up in the cap, and he won't be down to talk to you again.
I'd be giving them out to my players as a book on tape to motivate them. I'd be as a bad cop, I'd be one of the great withholding bad cops of all time. But if we were fired, Dave...
Yeah, when we're fired.
I think what you need to understand mostly about football is that when a manager's fired, it means their contract is almost entirely paid out in full, or at least you have a huge negotiated payout. So when we get fired, I mean, it would be embarrassing, but I imagine we'll do what every manager, I imagine, does when they're fired. Don't feel sorry for them. Just imagine them making love on top of piles of cash.
Not to each other. You never know. Could be the precipitating moment, Rod, where everything changes. It could be the game changer.
Tonight I celebrate my love.
All these managers who get fired or are deemed as being failures. The problem with football, the problem with it as a business, is that
Lord Business.
Unless you win, unless you finish first in the league, you're a failure. You haven't won. It's the tough thing for all these managers. It's a tough thing for all these owners who've been successful in whatever form of business they're in. They go into owning a Premier League club and they're losers unless they win it all.
Yeah, but to be a manager, bizarrely, the only way to win is to lose. Losing is winning.
That's deep. Way too deep for me, Rog. Oh, perfect segue into the FA Cup. Your FA Cup weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Arsenal versus Burnley. 10 a.m. Saturday, Liverpool versus West Ham. All Premier League fixture. 12:30 p.m. Saturday, MK Dons versus Chelsea at 11 a.m. on Sunday. Not sure we've ever played them before. All of those games on the Fox family of networks.
With Rob Stone for president.
Yeah, also a big game in La Liga as first place Barcelona hosts second place Atletico Madrid. 10 a.m. Saturday on beIN Sports. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page. MIB gets a tiny percentage, allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Roger?
A book.
Yep.
Gangster Warlords, Drug Dollars, Killing Fields, and the New Politics of Latin America by Jan Grillo.
Sounds uplifting for you.
Oh, it's a fantastic piece of work by an English journalist who tells the stories of the rise of individual cartels, the Red Commando in Brazil's favelas, the truly terrifying Knights Templars in the north of Mexico, Mara Salvatrucha in El Salvador, and the Shower Posse in the housing estates of Kingston, Jamaica.
Yeah.
It's an absorbing book, rollickingly well reported. The very kind of tome Sean Penn should have read before stepping foot in Mexico.
Great. Well, Rod, meanwhile, I'm putting in the Swiss Diamond non-stick double burner griddle. Here's the thing. This weekend, with the blizzard Jonas, the one thing I'd forgotten to buy pre-storm was dishwashing detergent from a dishwasher, and I didn't have any hand detergent either. So I had to minimise the amount of utensils, minimise the amount of pots and pans and plates.
Survivalist, Dave.
So basically, using the Swiss Diamond non-stick double burner griddle, which I bought a few weeks ago, just cooked everything on there. Pancakes in the morning, did a bit of grilled cheese for lunch, did some eggs on there, threw on a couple of steaks, did some chicken. I mean, you can basically cook anything on the griddle. And when I finally did get out into the snow on Sunday and got myself some dishwashing powder, it just cleans so easily. Just whap it on top of the boilers or hot plates or whatever you've got there on your range. And Bob's your uncle. Get yourself the Swiss Diamond non-stick double burner griddle.
Makes a nice change from your arga.
Yeah, I love a lager. You heat the whole home with an arga, Rod. Okay, other ways to connect to us. You can watch entire episodes of our crap TV show on NBC Sports, Live Extra, Apple TV and Roku. It's also up on our website, miniblazers.com, also on miniblazers.com.
We've got a special pod of Dominic Monaghan coming up because he couldn't make it this week.
Yeah, it was trapped
We're taping him in a minute.
In Los Angeles. Place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven. We produce that with our partner Guinness. We've got a Spotify account, men_in_blazers, meninblazers.wikispaces.com. That's a wonder of the modern world. Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers. Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies. We've got a Facebook. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs, Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. You can always send your Ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk,
listen
Rog.
To Cat Stevens. Listen to Father and Son.
Yeah.
And just think about spending the first 30 years of your life relating to the son parts, and then the last years of your life listening to the horrible father part.
The conveyor belt. Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Oh, Cat Stevens does. Exposure.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Nappy bomb it's for to everyone.
Yeah, and especially to Samson.
And Cat Stevens.